Well, good morning and welcome to Focus 580. I'm Jay Pierce sitting in for David Inch. And in this hour of the program, it's a regular monthly visit from Scott Spies from Spies Home Inspection Services. And Scott's here to answer your questions about home improvements, problems you may be having around the house. If you have water in the crawl space of the basement, Scott might be able to tell you what you can do about it and what you can do in the future to help prevent it. And our phone numbers are 333-9455 locally. And if it's long distance for you, you can call us toll-free, 800-222-9455. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Jay. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I guess you were out yesterday, you said, pumping out some basements.
Yeah, with that sudden torrential rain we had in the morning. Definitely had water just about anywhere and everywhere, including on most of the streets. I'm sure anybody trying to drive around found little barricades and such up in several areas.
Now, I'm going to brag a little bit because I've been listening to you and to your dad over the years talking about crawl spaces, which I have, and talking about how important it is to keep the water from getting near the foundation of your house to begin with, grading the landscaping away from the house, and working on your downspouts and gutters and the like. And I had a traditionally wet crawl space. I put a lot of labor over the last year into grading that landscaping. I think it was 2 inches per 10 feet or something that I did away and put up stakes and ropes and everything to measure it out. And then did all of the gutters and downspouts and ran them 6 to 8 feet away from the foundation of the house and put in all of that effort. And all of those days when I was saying to myself, man, this is a lot of work. But I have to say, after I got off work yesterday in the afternoon, I went home and I opened that door to the crawl space and it wasn't flooded.
That's always a good sign.
That was great. So I thank you for that. And perhaps that's an investment that some other people should make. At least I have experience that that it worked. So I was very happy. And we have full phone lines.
Well, that sounds like a good thing for this morning.
Well, let's go to line one and see who's there. In Champaign, you're on the air with Scott. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Scott sure did the right timing, didn't it? A big storm and Monday morning, start right off.
There you go.
Monday morning quarterbacking, I guess.
Yeah, there we go. Rather than the crawl space and the basements, I actually, the living room, I was walking in and drip, 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 drip. So I guess it's a roof, and the roof is, you know, supposed to be good for another 5 or 6 years or so. So I know we had pretty high winds. So any suggestions there, Scott?
Well, there's any number of different things that could have happened, including a valley, which generally speaking, valleys wear out about 3 to 5 years before a main roof, just due to the amount of water that run through there. But also in this type of situation where we have these very heavy rains, rain coming down at very large quantities in short periods of time, overflowing gutters can oftentimes be an issue. We get a little bit of tree debris in that gutter, and it only needs to block up the downspout, and it fills up the entire gutter. And I've seen it actually run back in through a soffit. So it kind of depends on where in the living room and what kind of a roof slope, things like that. But when it does come down that quick, it does build up on the roof enough that it can get over all places where there's a dormer and a roof or an upper level that somebody sealed with a roofing tar instead of a two-piece flashing. It's not that uncommon.
Mm-hmm. What about, I did take a look at the roof, a ladder and the various sides. In terms of my gutters are really clean, so I took it away there. But it does sort of flood back up into the shingles on the corners, doesn't it? There's nothing that's sort of common in some ways, right?
If you've got a low pitch roof or something like that, you can get a little bit of water coming back underneath there. Or if you've got, like say, if you've got a valley or a protrusion through the roof. On a rain like we had yesterday, it could even be a plumbing vent, a flashing boot, something like that around one of our protrusions, chimney or something like that. Or if we get enough rain with all that wind, we can actually blow some in ridge vents and roof vents.
Oh, okay. that the only way that they're pretty hard to discover is one of the problems, right, in terms of where the water came from. Is that right?
That is absolutely correct, because that water, once it starts getting underneath the layers of roofing, can move laterally quite a ways from capillary attraction. And a couple of times you can actually get it to wick uphill just a little bit. And then it drains between the shingles and the tar paper until it finds an opening. And then it drains between the tar paper and the plywood until it gets to an edge. And then it can follow that edge for, well, most plywood is a 4x8 sheet, so it can follow it 8 feet over one direction before it finds a place to drip out. So, yeah, it can take a little bit of sleuth work in the attic and up on the roof to try and figure out exactly what the source is.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you much for the call, and good luck tracking that down. That is tough. St. Joseph on line two, you're on the air with Scott Spies. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
My questions have to do with treated lumber.
Okay.
It was installed about 23 years ago, and I have some 4x4 fence posts, and I know some of the big box stores sell caps to go on top of those things, and I just wonder if it's worth the expense to extend their life and to prevent water and weather damage.
Well, of course, all lumber will tend to wick more water in the end grain. That's the way the trees and such are actually pulling the moisture up. So an open end grain is more likely to have some capillary attraction or some capillary action where the water does wick up or down into the end grain. Generally speaking, if the pressure treating was done right, it really shouldn't rot the wood, but you will get some deterioration on the ends to where you can get some sharp edges and such, and the sunlight will also help deteriorate it. So the caps on the top, they're better for, I mean, they're almost needed for non-treated lumber, but when you've got treated lumber, they're more of an aesthetics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Then the other question is, we have a covered porch, and again, the wood is about 23 years old. It's treated, but some planks are beginning to sort of splinter, and I just wonder if you have recommended action to minimize further splitting.
Well, kind of depends on what's causing them to split. Wood will deteriorate with sunlight. So if it's in an area, you say a porch, if it gets a lot of sun in there, we can get some cracking, drying, or what we'll commonly refer to as weathering of the wood. And most of the deck applications do have some type of UV protection to help reduce some of that. So it kind of depends on exactly what was causing your splitting. Like I say, I don't know the situation, how much sun we're able to get to that area.
Well, the porch is... primarily on the south side, so it gets a lot of sun.
So one of the weatherproofing formulas used for coating pressure-treated decks and such, they do contain some UV protectant, or they do make some stains that are intended for high traffic areas, some porch stains and such, which will also help reduce the effects of the sunlight.
So I get something with UV protection.
Yep.
Can you recommend one, or what am I looking
at? There's several different brands out there on the market you can get clear finishes. There's several deck sealers and water repellents. Or if you are wanting to stain it for a color, there's what they refer to it as porch paint, something that's durable enough to handle the wood or the foot traffic.
Yeah, and that's not much foot traffic. So it's a deck sealer I'm looking for with UV protection.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
That's correct.
My last question is, up to the porch are wood steps. And again, they're over 20 years old. And for some reason, I don't know why I did this, but I had painted them. And it's been a constant maintenance problem with splitting planks and small animals or ants or something burrowing into the wood. I just wonder if any recommendations to preclude further damage or minimize future maintenance.
Well, if you've got things getting into the wood, generally speaking, that means it probably did not take well on the pressure treating, because most critters are not attracted to pressure treated lumber. So my guess is you got a couple of bad boards or a couple of boards that were not well done, well treated. And so at that point, once you start getting that kind of an issue, my guess is you're getting some moisture into it and it's creating some damage, which is attracting the critters, the insects and such, and probably replacement is going to be needed soon.
good. Just what I wanted to hear.
Yeah, afraid of that.
Well, good luck with that, but you got a couple of decades out of that. That's a pretty good record.
Yes, I did, I guess. Yeah. Okay, great.
Thank you.
God. All right, well, thank you for calling.
Bye.
And let's go to line three now. This is
microphone.
Whoops. Oh, there we go. Line three, a caller on campus. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. I try to be as succinct as possible on this. We had a shutoff valve put in for our water main in one of our closets. It was the only shutoff for the house. One of the solder joints coming into the valve itself was not good, and it leaked horribly through about half a day. And so it soaked the closet that was in, and it went under the wall into our master bedroom, and everything, including the particle board subfloor, got soaked so that the boards actually started humping up in places. So we know that's all got to be replaced. We can tell from looking in the closets, which haven't been painted recently, that the water wicked up the wall maybe 4 to 6 inches, maybe as much as 8 inches in places. The main walls in those two rooms, though, have just been repainted in the last month with first a coat of primer sealant and then two coats of paint, and so nothing's showing through there. We want to make sure that we get any potential problems dealt with. So I'm wondering if you can tell us the kinds of things we ought to be looking for and what exactly to look for with the insurance on that.
Okay, well, actually, water in very short-term periods, in other words, you said a half a day, while it will do some damage and can do some swelling, oftentimes, depending on the type of board, whether it's a plywood or whether it's a particle board or a flake board, you can actually get it to dry back out. The key is going to be getting it dried out quickly enough that we don't end up with mold and mildew and we don't end up with any additional delamination from water getting into any of the glues in the particle board / flake board or press board.
Well, and that's what it is. It's particle board, and except for the bedroom, there's not been anything that shows the wood warping or anything, but we're also worried about the pad that got wet in the hallway and into the one room where one insurance adjuster said, oh, that's reusable. And carpet people said, no, that, once a pad gets wet, it's useless.
Well, the carpet pad has a foam material, and if you get water trapped into the little gaps and spaces in it, it's very, very difficult to get dried out. And the foam is a plastic, so it does act as kind of a vapor barrier. So even putting dehumidifiers and stuff quite often cannot get the moisture out of the foam. So
this is actually a pressed material with like a thin plastic on one side. So it's not the foam egg crate looking padding.
Okay, so it's one of those things. Like anytime you have a plastic like that has porosity, it is going to be very difficult to get moisture back out of it. My guess is the carpet companies will say that it needs to be replaced, not only because it could hold some moisture, but probably more for liability issues, where if they say it can be reused and at a later point in time there's some mold and mildew issues, they may have some legal responsibility. So from that standpoint, their company policy is probably just automatically say, if it's wet, throw it away.
And that's a real concern with us is the chance of mold down the line, especially. So what about the walls?
Well, basically, we just need to get it dried out quickly. It takes time for mold spores to grow, and when they do grow, they grow exponentially, 2 to 4, 4 to 8, and 8 to 16, and 16 to 32, anyway. So it does, once it starts, it can grow quite rapidly, but usually a short-term water situation like what you've had where we find it within a couple hours or a day or two, usually that can be dried back out and not necessarily be a mold mildew problem. Generally, mold mildew problems are a constant or long-term moisture problem where the mold spores actually get a good chance to start growing, and once they start growing, they just expound. So for something like what you've got, my guess is you aren't going to need to do much to the walls. The drywall does act as a sponge and will wick water. water. There's no two ways about it. It's a gypsum board, and gypsum board is a very dry, powdery type material that's pressed together. And if water gets in the end of it, it does wick up, and it can cause it to swell very quickly. But it's a 99% cosmetic issue. It doesn't hold the water once you get the water out of it, as long as the drywall hasn't swelled where it's quite noticeable or started to deteriorate at the bottom. There's no real reason to start replacing it. There is a paper backing on the drywall, and the paper backing can tend to hold a little bit of moisture, but usually fans and dehumidification systems, some either running an air conditioner or running a dehumidifier to try and pull the let everything evaporate and then pull the moisture out of the air, you can usually get things dried out.
Okay, well, they came, they shop vacked as much as they could at night. It was like 9 o'clock at night, and then, it stayed wet until the next day when carpet people brought out some fans and ripped up part of the carpet, and so it was blowing under the carpeting. They offered to replace the bottom foot of the drywall. Do you think that we should take them up on that?
There again, it all depends exactly on the situation. From what I am gathering from your situation, I would say no. Unless you can actually see that it is swelled, if you run your hand over the board and feel that it is swelled, I really don't think there's that much damage. You caught it quick enough, we shouldn't have a big problem with something growing in there. If it's, if it's a type of deal where you have a temperature pressure relief valve on a water heater that leaks and you don't catch it for 6 or 7 weeks and then you start noticing it as it gets worse and worse, then that type of thing, yeah, the drywall is probably ruined. But on a very short-term situation like what you've got, unless you can physically see that there's a problem, I doubt that it really needs to be replaced.
Okay, thanks a lot for your help.
All right. Certainly. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, and good luck with that project. Let's go to Lafayette, Indiana on line 4. You're on the air with Scott Spies. Go ahead.
Hello. About floodwaters outdoors in the streets and in the yards, how far will electric shock travel through them from a downed power line?
Oh, there's a good question.
Well, there's always I'm not even going to try and get into the physics on electrical, but water conducts electricity very well, much like copper and aluminum and et cetera, and that's what we use to transfer power across the line. So, yes, anything wet that has a down power line is a possible issue. I'm not going to say that there's a set formula as to how far it can go, because there's a lot of factors as to what kind of conductivity that puddle has, how much debris is in it, what kind of debris, et cetera. But basically, if you see a power wire down and it's raining, good idea to stay as far back as possible.
I just wondered if it could travel down the whole block.
I'm sure that it could under the right circumstances. The electricity is seeking a ground. In other words, it's trying to go from the power source to a ground. The water does make for a very good ground. Most likely what happens is when a power line hits water like that, it is grounded so quickly that it puts an overload situation, and the power line should trip a breaker or trip a shunt someplace in the line, and so it should not have power for long periods of time. But most power stations are set, if there's a sudden drop in or sudden overload, that they shut off, and then they have a timer to where they try and automatically reset in case it whatever was corrected itself, so that you don't have power outages for long periods of time. And you don't know when that reset is or will happen.
And that could recharge it then.
And it can turn it back on again until we end up with the overload. Usually it results in a couple of quick sparks or something like that before it shuts itself back down again. But, yeah, power lines and water, very bad combination.
Yeah. Good question with this weather.
In another combination, I have an old house and old sewer tiles, which are operating all right because I use on them the treatment twice a year, the treatment with copper sulfate sent through. But how confident are you, or how complete is this, since I suppose the water with the sewage with copper sulfate runs through only at the bottom of the tile? Does it do anything against tree roots from above?
Well, the tree roots, they don't like the copper sulfate, so they will shrink away from it. It's kind of a herbicide that will try and reduce the plant growth. So the copper sulfate, yes, what will happen is as it goes through the line, it'll collect on the sides of the pipe, and it will tend to poison and kill off the roots. So, yes, it does work even for the ones on the top to help keep things cleared out.
Even up to the top?
Well, when you run water through the pipe, water will tend to wick around the pipe. In other words, even though there's only water at the bottom edge of the pipe, it does tend to draw up the sides of the pipe, so you can end up with the copper sulfate residue sitting there, and the roots hit it and absorb that copper sulfate, and it does kill off that section of root. So I'm not going to say it's going to take all of them out, but it will reduce their growth. It will definitely slow it down so that it will stay open longer.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. Good calls. Today on the program, and we do have a few more to get to in a moment, and I want to remind you that we're talking with Scott Spies from Spies Home Inspection Service, a regular monthly visit to talk about just about anything to do with your house, keeping it up, solving a problem with it. And we've had some considerable noise in our broadcast signal today. We apologize for that. We've had some on and off problems since we're talking about infrastructure and things over the past few weeks with apparently with the way our signal gets out to the transmitter, with the way the audio goes here from Campbell Hall to our transmitter, and they're trying to track that down. It's a long way and a lot of wires going through a lot of junctions from here in the studio over to where it goes out of the building and down to the transmitter site and then into the transmitter eventually. And we apologize for the problems that we've been having and just ask you to be patient as we are working on them and working with the campus infrastructure folks as well. So with that said, let's...
Once again, how well electricity runs through water. We may have
right.
a junction that is getting wet in the bottom of a pipe somewhere.
Well, it sounds like we have something like that because we're getting that that hum that's rather persistent. But let's go on and go to another caller in Champaign on line one. You're on the air with Scott. Go ahead. Line one, are you there with us? Not sure if they hung on. Okay, well, let's try going to line two. This would be a call from Bradley, Illinois. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi there. I'm calling for my parents who are snowbirds, and they live in a 30-year-old split-level home, and we're really smelling some new smells downstairs over the last year. It's really gotten worse, and I'm wondering about the mold and the mildew that you were talking about before, if it's really multiplied. They have two bedrooms downstairs where it's pretty concentrated, and they had shut those rooms off during a couple seasons of air conditioning, and now it's really smelling. They don't know whether to get rid of the rug that is also 30 years old, how to test. Can you help us, please?
Well, there are several different tests that can be done for airborne mold and mildew spores, air quality testing. That's probably your best bet for something like that. If the rooms were shut off and so we were not moving a lot of air through them, it's quite possible that we had some dampness, some moisture that has allowed for some mildew or mold to start in the back areas, backs of closets, underneath beds, underneath furniture, things like that. And quite often that can result in an odor, particularly in an older carpet. Most of the newer stuff, they have some treatment to help resist some of that. But in an older carpet, yeah, it's not uncommon. I generally recommend for people that don't want to run their air conditioner on a regular basis that they may want to try and put in a dehumidification system, a dehumidifier somewhere that they can run to help pull that moisture out, particularly in the lower level where you're block walls are below grade. They tend to stay cooler. And if we have high humidity in the house, the moisture will want to condense on the first cool surface. So a concrete block wall or a concrete floor towards an outside edge that wants to stay in the 55 to 60 degree range, that can very quickly become the very coldest spot in the house during the summer. And we can get some condensation on the really humid days.
So your suggestion is to do the airborne quality testing. Where do you get that, like at your home?
Generally, there's a couple of labs. I know here locally we've got somebody that does air quality testing. Usually it's not a quick, easy little test much like the radon test or something. Usually it's a matter of having somebody go in there and having a unit that they can draw air samples in through a charcoal canister and actually force the air to come through there.
Well, they've put things in the closet, and the things that come out of the closet in a year are mildewy themselves, so I think we're pretty sure it's mildewy. Would the rug removal be enough, or do we need to do more?
Well, There is no blanket answer for that.
Okay.
Depending on what has caused the mildew, where the moisture source is, if the moisture source is due to moisture coming through the foundation block due to some get downspout issues or grading on the outside, then we could have mold and mildew in behind the wall finish on those walls. If the moisture is just due to high humidity in the house, not dehumidifying the house, not ventilating the house, keeping things shut up, then those areas may not have that moisture. So I would have to say that there is no real blanket answer for that. But most likely, since the carpet does resist a lot of airflow and usually does have some type of a plastic padding type situation, which will hold moisture, that's usually the first place to start.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. And good luck with that. Yeah, that's another tough one to track down. It's like that water coming in through the roof, trying to track down where that's
going. Yeah, and like I say, since water moves according to vapor pressure rather than airflow, it's one of those things where if you have a cold spot, that water will seek that cold spot. And while people say, oh, well, I shut that room up, so it's got this odor to it. Well, generally speaking, shutting the room up is not blocking the moisture, but it does block enough airflow that we can get water condensing on things. We're not drying it back out again.
Yeah, that's a good tip. All right, we have some lines open if you'd like to call in and talk to Scott Spies. 333-9455 or 800-222-9455, and he'll tackle your home repair or a home problem question. And let's go to line 3 for our next call. And line 3 is calling from Gibson City. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, hello. Well, my problem is the roof. We need to get a new roof, and the trouble is it's a flat roof.
Mm-hmm.
And we had it done, like, when we first bought the house 9-10 years ago. And we cannot get a hold of the guy that does it. And I know that not everybody does, you know, the flat roof with the special rubberized roofing. And I don't know if you have any ideas who to get a hold of or not, or if you, that's what I guess I'm looking for right now.
Well, I know that there are several companies here in Champaign-Urbana that do that kind of work, but I'm not familiar with the people in the Gibson City area that would be able to help you out, and I don't know if the people from here are willing to go that far with our fluctuating gas prices.
So,
not sure that I can help you out on that. I do know that depending on what type of roofing you've got on there, though, generally speaking, a low pitch or flat roof like that, one of these rubber membranes is one of the longest lasting type of roofing materials to install. But if you put a rubber roofing on it within the last 10 years, you should not be having problems with it already, unless we've got some seams that did not get sealed down and it may just require some repairs.
Oh, you know what? We have skylights, and that's where the leaking is coming mostly, I think.
Okay, so it's a flashing issue around some of the skylights, or could it actually even be some of the skylights themselves, depending on the type of skylights. Generally, the ones that are curbed or stand up higher on the roof are usually more leak-free than the ones that are low profile or fairly flat with the roof. But, yeah, it sounds like need somebody that's fairly familiar with the rubber roofing, because my guess is they got a seam someplace that just didn't seal well.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
All right. Sorry I couldn't give you a name.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Well, good luck on that. Yeah, that'll be another one of those flat roofs.
Flat roof, yeah, and especially when we start getting heavy rains like this, because it takes longer for the water to get off, and so it tends to build up a little bit more. And water doesn't like itself. It tends to repel away from itself. If you pour a glass of water and look at the water, it actually goes up the sides of the glass. It's actually more attracted to the glass than it is to itself.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those things where once something gets wet, that water wants to run away from where the source is and run. It can actually run uphill and collect itself in all sorts of small areas. And thin film attraction, two surfaces very close together with a small space, will actually conduct moisture, wick moisture up. For instance, in ceramic tile shower surrounds, a little bit of loose mortar or a piece of tile that's loose can wick water 6-7 inches upward and start loosening glue on tiles. So you end up with a crack in a mortar joint, and two tiles up start falling down. And people are like, well, what's the problem here?
Like, yeah, because naturally you'd think it would be down from there.
So, capillary attractional thin film attraction will yank that water right up to those areas.
Wow. Well, that's good to know. Let's go to Savoy on line 1. You're on with Scott Spies. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. I have a duplex that is on a crawl space, And with all the rain, we had a river outside our house. I got water in my crawl space. It was probably about 3 inches deep. Now, that was there yesterday. And today it's gone, but it's still wet in there. What's the best way to dry that out?
Well, basically, we need to get some air moving to get that moisture into a vapor form. So it's not a bad idea to drop a fan down in there and let it move some air. If you've got crawl space vents, you want to open those up and try and get the cross ventilation through for situations like that. Now, if that moisture is under your vapor barrier, it's really not as critical because it's not coming up into the house and it'll eventually soak down into the ground. But if it's sitting up on top of your plastic vapor barrier, then, yeah, we need to get some air movement to get it evaporated.
Okay. And is there anything I should do to prevent that from occurring in the future?
Well, it all depends on where you're at. I mean, I was in a basement yesterday that had probably close to 35 inches of water in there, and it's one of those things where no, there's not much you can do. When if you said you had a river outside, well, if the water level is outside is higher than what your crawl space vents are or what your grading is, water will go downhill. And of course, anytime you have that much standing water, you've got saturation of the soil level. So
yeah, and it was standing.
Yeah. Well, it was standing on roads and everything yesterday, viaducts especially. I believe Jay saw somebody drive one of the viaducts and have to abandon their floating car. So, yesterday was a pretty interesting day for moisture.
Yesterday was interesting. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. Good luck with that.
Thanks.
Yeah, that's one of those things, Scott, I should ask. Yesterday was a rather unusual event. Is that necessarily, if you have water in your basement? I'm sure a lot of people have water in their basements and crawl spaces that don't usually. So is yesterday a good indicator necessarily that you have to go out and do something, or is this one of those unusual events that no matter what you had done, you might not be able to have prevented it?
There are definitely situations where no matter what you've done, you're going to end up with water, and particularly with continuing development, where I had one last week where there's a new subdivision going in behind a well-established subdivision, and in the process they've managed to change the drainage pattern. Mm-hmm. And when they changed the drainage pattern, all of a sudden a basement that has been dry for 25 years had 3 feet of water standing in the bottom of it because now the river runs through it. Mm-hmm. Well, it used to be a drainage along the back of the lot. With the new houses, the back of the lot turned into more of a levee than a drainage area, and we ended up with a problem in the house. So, when we have these very sudden rains where we get a lot of water runoff, it's a good time to say, okay, well, here's where the low spots and here's where the problems are, and try and do what you can. But there are areas where there just is nothing that you're going to be able to do about it because the surface water is higher than what that level of the house is. It's more of a city problem than a individual problem. Yeah. It's more of a matter of how do we keep this water from accumulating in these areas.
Right. You may just get caught in the path, as you said, of the river.
Yeah.
Let's go to line one from St. Joseph, somebody with a follow-up on copper sulfate.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I heard the question regarding the use of copper sulfate. Mm-hmm. Is that treatment effective with a septic tank?
No, I would not want to use the copper sulfate with the septic tank because I'm afraid that the copper sulfate will damage some of the bacteria that is being used to digest the sewage that you've got in your tank.
Uh-huh.
They do make some. Basically, that bacteria is there to break down the enzymes and such and allow it to go out into the field, but I'm afraid that the copper sulfate would damage your anaerobic bacteria or non-air-breathing bacteria.
Okay, very good. Thanks a lot.
All right. Yeah, thank you. Now, I do have a septic tank, and it has a like a cleanup-type plug beyond the septic tank before the leach field, and I was told you could put the copper sulfate in there and wash it out with a hose to get it down into the leach field to get the roots out.
That would be a possibility.
I've been doing that.
I would have to say that 90% of the septic systems I've seen don't have the clean out after the after the system unless they're like a sewage treatment system rather than an actual septic tank.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this has it for
some
reason.
You've got a rare one there, Jay.
Yeah. And I've been doing that, so I hope it's okay.
Yeah. Once it's past the septic tank, then the copper sulfate I don't think is a problem.
Yeah.
I'll be quite honest. I'm not quite the chemist, so I'm not going to say exactly what the copper sulfate can do with the enzymes. But just from a practical standpoint, I would be a little leery of doing something like that.
Right. You got to be careful with those things. Now, there was a second leach field added to mine. Later, and that may be when it was put in. I don't know. It seems to be at the T intersection between the two. And so you can get it down in them and then do the hose and go that way. So, well, I hope I'm not wrecking anything.
No, don't think so. Not if it's not going in the tank.
Make that thing last a while. They're expensive to replace. And line two, you're on the air from Urbana. Go ahead.
Yeah, Scott, got a question for you. I've got a cabin in northwest Wisconsin, and I put I raised it up and had a lower level walkout basement put in, and a new septic tank and leach field. Since I've done this work, on occasion when I approach the cabin, I get the smell of gas. So I called the LP folks to do a test, and they said it wasn't from propane. They said it might be septic gas. Can you tell me what I could do about that sort of thing, a way of identifying the problem and fixing it?
Well, no.
Oh, okay.
I'm not sure that I can identify that. Kind of depends on what kind of gas or what kind of an odor you're getting.
Mm-hmm.
I have run up on places where we do have a foul odor, which can be an indication that the leach field may not be working properly or getting some sewage water to the surface, which creates an odor.
Okay.
Very rarely do we get enough air into a system for sewer gases to come up out of a septic system. I mean, yes, if I'm walking up on a roof and I go across the vent pipe and stick my nose in there, yes, I'll be able to smell the sewage. But very rarely does it actually draw up out of it unless we get just the wrong wind combination.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I suppose it's possible that if your house is set in such a way that the wind comes over the top of the roof and creates a low pressure area over the top of one of your roof vents, that yes, we could draw some odor out of it. And if you come from the downwind side, you could smell some of it, in which case we may need to raise some of the roof vents to get them up high enough that they're not affected by that low pressure area.
Mm-hmm.
Is it closer to the house, farther away from the house?
Oh, it says we approach the cabin. As we're coming up to it, so 20 feet.
Okay, so and generally speaking, on the downwind side?
Yes.
On the backside. Like I say, it's possible that we've got a vent pipe that's not quite high enough, and a good, generally speaking, cabins out in the middle of nowhere usually have a pretty good breeze. We don't have much of a windbreak around.
Oh, yeah.
So it may be a matter of simply raising one or two of the vent pipes, get them up high enough to where that low pressure area doesn't draw the odor up out of the tank.
Okay.
So getting up on the roof and extending one of the vent pipes could be the answer.
Okay, you're fine. Thank you much.
Thank you for the call. And let's go to line three in Champaign. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Hi.
I had a interesting situation yesterday where at the height of the storm, it was about 11 o'clock, the house I have has a finished basement, and the exterior walls of the basement are finished, and I started getting seepage in around one wall, so I very quickly got some mops and things and started collecting it, but it only lasted for about an hour. I have a field drain system under the floor, however it's arranged, you know, with a sump pump.
Mm-hmm.
That was running like crazy till, you know, about 5 o'clock last night or so. And I figured as long as the seepage is coming in, the sump pump is running rather, I should be down there mopping the stuff up. But this the leak only lasted for maybe an hour and then it quit, which made me wonder. Now that was at the height of it, and there was a lake formed about 10 feet away from the house between my house and my neighbor's house. And I'm thinking, well, that's probably the source. But the fact that it just only lasted a little bit struck me as odd, which made me wonder if I'm speculating that the soil around the foundation of the house and between where this lake was and the house swelled and perhaps and cut down the flow and so on and so forth. So speculate on that if you would. But one thing I really need to know is I can't tell. There doesn't seem to, on the exterior of the finished wall in the basement, there doesn't seem to be any damage from water at this point. And once it stopped seeping in, I've had a dehumidifier running down there since then and left the air conditioning on and so forth. I'm trying to dry it as fast as possible. Will that mitigate or at least reduce the chance that I'll have mold problems in the future, do you think?
Yes, getting it dried out as quickly as possible is the best way to reduce the chances of that mold and mildew growth. Again, the mold and mildew, think of it as a plant growth. It has to go through a process to grow. It doesn't just automatically say, oh, here I am, let's go. There has to be a moisture source. There has to be a food source. There has to be a spore that actually gets into it.
Too, doesn't it?
The longer you end up with the water, the more likely you are to end up
with the
mold and mildew. So the short-term, 1 or 2 day type situations, as long as you get things dried out. Now, I'm not going to say that's an every time case, because there are places where there may have been a previous mold and mildew issue, and that the mold has gone dormant because it dried out. Now all of a sudden it's gotten moist again, and so the spores reactivate or start growing again. But again, the quicker you dry it out, the less chance you have of a real issue. This whole mold and mildew scare, I have to take with a grain of salt, in that there are more types of molds and mildew than there probably are types of people.
Oh, yeah.
They've been around longer than we have.
Yes.
So to say that, there's no mold here is baloney. There's mold anywhere and everywhere. We just hope we don't get any of the really dangerous types, and we don't want to have a lot of mold and mildew growth. So, yes, keeping things dried and keeping things clean, keeping dirt away from concrete surfaces where it can start. Things like that.
I'm still kind of puzzled where the water was coming from, although I'm pretty sure it was this lake that formed a bit.
I was going to say, it sounds to me like it just came in quicker than your tiling type system. I don't know which type of base drain I don't know what kind of baseboard you have or drain system you have, but when you figure what the perimeter square footage is around the outside of the house, if you've got a lot of water coming through there, and even if you've got a 2 or 3 inch tile, you can get an awful lot of water where it's coming in the fastest.
Oh, yeah, there was a tremendous flow coming into the – I was watching the sump system, too, and it was coming in pretty steady, you know, many gallons a minute, I'd say. I went and checked to make sure all the drains were – downspouts and stuff were working correctly, and this lake that formed was a good 6-7 feet. The edge of it was a good 6-7 feet away from the house, which – I'm thinking that it was probably close enough, you know, and that's where it came from.
Yeah, it's still quite moist in that area.
Yeah.
And there is a little bit to say as far as the ground expanding and creating a little bit of a seal. If we've had a period of dry, or if you have an area that has got a good overhang and so the soil has stayed dry, it has shrunk away from the house. And once it starts getting wet and it starts expanding, it can actually close the gap so you can start slowing it down.
I'm guessing that's what happened, because it like I said, it quit seeping very – Just for a little bit. Maybe you got a couple of gallons at most, and then it stopped.
I'm going to take a wild guess and say it may have even been on the north side of the house.
Yep.
There you go.
How did I guess the north side of the house from the radio? Well, I'll tell you how I guessed that.
How did you do that?
Well, I thank you very much.
All right.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Well, the north side of the house, of course, does not get as much rain as what the other sides of the house. Generally speaking, if we have a storm in this area, it comes out of the south-southwest area. And so those are the areas that stay wet. Well, when we get one of these, what they refer to as a nor'easter or something that comes out of the north or out of the northeast, those are areas of the house that the soil level is drier because it's been protected by overhang and it's been protected by the house. So when we get one coming from what I'll call the wrong direction, we can end up with some interesting leaks. Very often, particularly in newer construction, 3 to 5 years old, we get a good hard wind out of the north, and I'll get 5 or 6 phone calls for people saying, hey, we've got a water leak. Where's it coming from? And it's only because they've never had water blown against the house from that particular direction.
Hmm.
My house has a door that faces north. I don't have a storm door on it because it's a good steel insulated door, but we get the rain like we have yesterday, and my threshold gets a little bit wetter than usual, and it tends to swell, and the door starts sticking. So, you know, it's one of those things where I can tell when we've had a rain from the north because my front door is a little more difficult to open. Well, so, again, we can have the soil may have dried out on the north side of the house, and when we got that lake headed towards the house, it could actually have a pretty much ceiling type effect, as the caller indicated.
Wow. So you had a door that gets stuck a little bit too. Even at Scott Spee's house, stuff happens. Huh? Well, the rest of us shouldn't feel so bad.
Well, when the architect forgets to design an overhang on the north side of the house, and we get one of these north winds, Yeah, you can get some, you know, I've got a bi-level, which the front door has got a fair amount of wall space above it, and it has little or not, I think, about a 4-inch overhang over that area.
Yeah.
If it had a 3-foot overhang, it probably would have been a little
would
bit
have been
nicer.
Better. Huh. All right. Well, we have a few minutes left to go, and we have a couple of callers here. Scott Spies is making a monthly visit from Spies Home Inspection Service. We do these programs to give you a chance to tap his mind on home improvement, home repair, home problems that you have, and to try to give you at least some idea of what might be causing it, what you might do about it, or some direction to go in anyhow. And from Urbana, line one, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I've learned quite a bit so far listening, but I do have a question. We did have water in our crawl space for the first time yesterday in an addition that's 18 years old. And I believe that it occurred because a gutter overflowed and the water was trapped there against the house and seeped in. We have about a 3-inch thick foam insulation on the cinder block, so there's no way that I can tell when and if the cinder block will be dry. There is some sitting water down there, but only in one area very close to where the water entered. And my second question is, I need to know your theory about the vents in the crawl space, when to have them open, when to have them closed in general. I understand that we probably should have them open now to help dry it out.
That would be correct. When you've got some standing water or a situation like what we had where we suddenly have everything wet, some cross-ventilation is a desired effect. We want to try and get vents open on both sides of the crawl space or on all sides of the crawl space, depending. You said an addition, so I'm assuming it was a three-sided type situation.
Exactly.
You want to try and get it to where the natural airflow will help evaporate that moisture off the vapor barrier. I generally like to see crawl space vents closed year-round if you can keep the crawl space dry. But obviously, if the crawl space has some standing water, we need to get that moisture evaporated out as quickly as possible. Moving air will dry water faster than non-moving air. So some type of ventilation or some type of air movement in the crawl space will get that water airborne. Of course, once it's airborne or a vapor, then it can tend to move out and away from the crawl space, and things can dry out more rapidly. So, yes, open if you've got water on the vapor barrier, it's a good idea to open it up. Now, if tomorrow, you know, this is Illinois, we don't know what the weather's going to do. If tomorrow comes up to be 99 degrees and 99% humidity, opening that crawl space vent is not going to help you out. So there's no real reason to have it open. Now, a fan would be a better situation. But if it's relatively cool and breezy, to where the humidity level, the relative humidity is under 60%, or so, 60 to 65%, then yes, opening the vents will get it out and away. I don't want to make the crawl spaces seem like a high-maintenance situation, but when it's very humid outside, having the vents open probably is more detrimental than helpful.
We usually keep them closed always.
Yeah, if it's dry down there, that's probably the best thing, because otherwise you won't have to open them and close them every time the humidity levels outside change. I know there are some types out there that will open and close automatically with temperature changes, but temperature changes don't always indicate what the humidity levels are going to do, and to open the crawl space vents up when it gets humid is not necessarily the best way of doing it.
So you think a fan is sufficient and a dehumidifier?
It's something to keep air circulating through that crawl space, because that moving air will then allow that water to evaporate, and then once it is evaporated, the vapor pressure will try and move it out and away. And should do the most effective job of drying out your crawl space, yes.
Thanks so much.
All right. Have fun with that. Been there. Line two, another call from Urbana. Go ahead, please. You're on with Scott.
Yeah, I didn't get much water in the house, not even really any standing water, just damp spots. But I got what seems to be a brownout in some of my electrical circuits. I was running a fan and a heater to just blow the stuff around, you know, like you said, get the circulation going, get it dry. But for the first time, I've been in this house over 20 years, first time I noticed when I turned the fan on different speeds, I saw the light flicker. And it made me a little suspicious. I walked around the house. I went and tripped all the breakers and put them back on. And it seems as if I have circuits that are now crossed because I couldn't get the lights to turn out where I was standing in front of the breaker box with a flashlight. You got any ideas of tools I can use, things I could plug in to trace the circuits so I figure out which circuit has the extra loads on it?
Well, okay, now you got me between a rock and a hard spot. It's one of those things where if you have to ask the question, chances are the only recommendation I can say is to call an electrician. I never try and recommend somebody start playing around, even if you're fairly familiar with it. Water and electricity is never a good thing. It sounds to me like you may have a ground issue. Anytime we have different circuits starting to affect each other, my guess is that our main ground in the panel or the main ground outside has gotten a loose connection or something. And so one appliance is trying to ground through another.
I agree with you. I tested with a voltmeter between the plumbing and the drain in the basement, and it didn't show positive until I ran water down the drain.
Yeah, it sounds to me like it's something either at the ground rod or at the power connection at the masthead or even something inside the service box. And there's no way that I'm going to attempt to troubleshoot it over the phone. That's something we definitely need to get an electrician to come out there and take a look at, because my guess is that over time we've had some moisture or condensation around one of your connections and we've just got a little bit of corrosion. Pull the cover on the box. Don't stick your finger in the box, but pull the cover on the box and look for any discolorations.
The box is clean. I flipped all the breakers.
Okay. Look at the plastic sheathing on the wires to see if there's any indication of any overheating, any bubbling, or any shiny spots on the insulation that look like it could have been a melt. Because anytime you have a loose connection, whether it be ground or power, it does create a heat issue. And so usually the insulation on the wires is a quick way to kind of look at things.
Then call an electrician.
I was going to say, there's a good chance that it may be the connection at the masthead up on the roof.
All right.
Yes, masthead on the roof.
Where the wires come in. Where your wires come in from the power company.
From the power company. Yeah. I gotcha. So I can have the power company check that part.
Right. Anything from the masthead to the power pole, it belongs to the power company, yes.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much.
Good. Right. Yeah, well, good luck solving that one, and you're right. Playing with electricity can be risky. So.
Well, and that's one thing I want to bring up as we close out here, Jay, is that if you do have wet basement or wet crawl space, don't just jump right in it, because there is a chance that something electrical, the washing machine, a drop cord, extension cord got left on the floor. There is a chance that there can be some electricity in those areas. So if you've got standing water, be very careful. It's ideally, if we have a ground fault circuit interrupter, it should shut the circuit off. But there's always the what-if case. So water and electricity don't mix. So a flooded basement or a flooded crawl space, you want to do what you can to get it dried out. But don't just jump right in there.
Good advice. Okay, Scott Spies, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much.